Studio 360.
And when he came to the place where the wild things are, they roared their terrible roars and gnashed their terrible teeth and rolled their terrible eyes and showed their terrible claws. Till Max said, "Be still," and tamed with the magic trick of staring into all their yellow eyes without blinking once. And they were frightened and called him the most wild thing of all. They made him king of all wild things. "And now," cried Max, "let the wild rumpus start."
That, of course, is from Maurice Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are. If you're under 60 or so, you might remember hearing that being read to you as a kid. But have you ever thought to reread it as an adult? That is the idea behind a terrific new book by the journalist and critic Bruce Handy. I've known Bruce since the 1980s when I hired him as an editor and writer, practically a kid himself at the time, at Spy Magazine. His new book is called Wild Things, The Joy of Reading Children's Literature as an Adult. I invited Bruce to join me in a conversation with the children we know best, our kids. Zoe and Isaac Handy and Kate and Lucy Anderson are patiently waiting in the control room, and they'll join us to talk about reading kids' books as young grown-ups. But first, just us paterfamiliuses. Bruce Handy, welcome to Studio 360.
Oh, thank you so much, Kurt. I'm so glad to be here.
So how did you come up with the idea for this book?
I mean, it really came out of having kids and reading to the kids. And, you know, like a lot of families, we had this nice nighttime ritual. But I found that I was actually really getting interested in the books in a kind of a critical or slash intellectual or, you know, even just kind of emotional or entertaining way.
You talk about in the book of this moment when you were reading out loud to your children. Well, you realized that they have this entirely different emotional resonance, the premise of your book.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah, when I was reading them, The House at Pooh Corner.
Yes.
But yeah, we get to the last chapter and, it's never really made explicit, but, you know, Christopher Robin is being sent off to boarding school. He's like, I don't know, however old, he's 10 or whatever you are when you sent off. And there's this just heart-wrenching scene where he has, you know, he sits down with Pooh and he's basically breaking up with Pooh and he's telling you, Pooh, I can't see you anymore. And Pooh doesn't really, Pooh's just doesn't get it.
Pooh, promise you won't forget about me, ever. Not even when I'm 100. Pooh thought for a little. How old shall I be then? 99. Pooh nodded. I promise, he said. Still with his eyes on the world, Christopher Robin put out a hand and felt for Pooh's paw. Pooh, said Christopher Robin earnestly, if I'm not quite... He stopped and tried again. Pooh, whatever happens, you will understand, won't you? Understand what? Oh, nothing. He laughed and jumped to his feet. Come on. Where? Said Pooh. Anywhere, said Christopher Robin.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading it to them. I was just, bawling, and it's clear this whole thing about kind of leaving childhood behind. And I have to confess that I'm a sucker for that. It's like I still if you played Puff the Magic Dragon, I would get teary. I mean, that just, that stuff kills me.
And no, me too. It is the parent-child thing, and children growing up is the one of the reliable things that can make me choke up.
I think I try to make this case in the book that I think these should be considered as seriously as many people consider, graphic novels and comic books and comic strips. If a graphic novel is prose, a novel, then these are kind of the graphic version of poetry, and something maybe like Goodnight Moon is so simple, or Kulon of a Haiku or something.
Yeah. You write about how when you first read Where the Wild Things Are as a child, it really wasn't a favorite.
I just didn't get it. Yeah, Where the Wild Things Are, suddenly the vines start growing in his room, and it's just this very sort of strange dream logic, and just didn't interest me, really. And then,
too Freudian.
But yeah, but now, as an adult, that's what's so fascinating about it, because it is so Freudian, and it is, it is dream logic, and suddenly I find that compelling, and also having kind of anger and expressed in this, this beautiful, dreamy way, and it suddenly spoke to me in a way it just hadn't as a kid.
When you read it to your children, or when you were just doing this book?
Like a lot of these books, like Goodnight Moon also, we were given as, you know, baby gifts. I was very excited then to read it to them, and the sort of the punchline of my story is that they didn't really like it that much either, any more than I had as a kid.
So give them a decade or two.
Yeah.
And you really don't like one of the most beloved children's books of the last 50 years, which is The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein.
That book is the most divisive book, I think, of sort of grand, you know, children's literature. I mean, it seems like it's a real love it or hate it. I mean, yeah, I just find it, you know, maudlin and sort of punishing. And
a book, however, that deals with this, some of the issues of that The Giving Tree does, death and loss, beautifully, of course, is E.B. White's Charlotte's Web, which you talk about. This is a clip of E.B. White reading Charlotte's Web.
"Charlotte," he moaned. "Charlotte, my true friend. Come now, let's not make a scene," said the spider. "Be quiet, Wilbur. Stop thrashing about." "But I can't stand this," shouted Wilbur. "I won't leave you here alone to die. If you're going to stay here, I shall stay too." "Don't be ridiculous," said Charlotte. "You can't stay here. Zuckerman and Lurvy and John Arable and the others will be back any minute now, and they'll shove you into that crate, and away you'll go. Besides, it wouldn't make any sense for you to stay. There would be no one to feed you. The fair grounds will soon be empty and deserted."
That's E.B. White reading his great book, Charlotte's Web.
So well written. It's so well, I mean, well, E.B. White. But it's, you know, it's just so beautifully crafted. Like the first line is like, "Pa, where are you going with that axe?" There's the theme right there. You know, this is a book about life and death. You know, again, I think that's a good example, too, because I think he didn't set out to, like, I'm going to write a book about spider who saves a pig in the circle of life. You know, he was very, spent a lot of time on a farm. He was very, you know, involved kind of emotionally with his animals. He spent a lot of time in his barn. And I think some of the meaning of the story came out of what he was interested in as a person, you know, the way themes should emerge out of a great adult novel.
One of the things I love about this book of yours is that I learned these things about the authors. That Goodnight Moon, one of my favorites of all time, and Runaway Bunny, which I got to say I love even more, were both by the same person. Tell us some more about Margaret Wise Brown.
Yeah, I literally thought, I kind of envisioned her as the old lady, you know, whispering hush, but she actually looked a lot like Carol Lombard, and she kind of had a screwball comedy kind of life in the 30s. She was kind of involved in cafe society.
And she didn't have children. She didn't go all gooey for them, apparently, which is also true of Marie Sendak, which is also true of Ted Geisel, Dr. Seuss. What do you make of that, that this is a motif among beloved children's authors?
Yeah. You know, Margaret Wise Brown, she said, you know, to write for children, you don't have to like children. You just have to like what children like.
Well, I think it's time to invite these grown-up children of ours into the studio to talk more about what it was they liked. Isaac and Zoe Handy, welcome.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having us.
Kate and Lucy Anderson, welcome.
Hello, Dad. Thank you. Hi.
So, because I'm a decade older than you, Bruce, my children are too, approximately a decade older than your children, because we're just conventional people who do things at the age you're supposed to, I guess.
Yeah.
But Isaac and Zoe, you're in college, both of you?
Yes, I'm about to be a senior.
I'm a freshman.
Have you read this book?
I have read his book.
Okay.
All of it. I think Isaac has too, a little bit.
I've read parts of it. I haven't, mostly just fact checking. Gotta keep him in line.
Yes.
Right. One of the books your dad discusses is Goodnight Moon.
"Good night, little house, and good night, mouse. Good night, comb, and good night, brush. Good night, nobody. Good night, mush. And good night to the old lady whispering hush. Good night, stars. Good night, air. Good night, noises everywhere."
So, Zoe and Isaac, do you remember being read this by your choking up sentimental father?
Yeah, I do. I remember lots of Goodnight Moon. We have this rocking chair in our room. I remember, like, my dad just, like, sitting there going back and forth.
He definitely read it a lot. It probably wasn't mine or my sister's favorite, but it was always his.
So. You let the old man, indulged him in his delight in reading it.
Somebody had to.
We always laughed at Goodnight Mush, though. Do you remember that?
I do remember Goodnight Mush.
Yeah.
But as adults now, or not quite adults, young adults, do you get it more now than you did it before?
Not really. I see how much it, I see how much it means to my dad, and that makes it mean more to me because I see how much of an effect it had on him. But I can't ever really say that I felt the same.
So how about you, Kate and Lucy, now that you're adults? Do you have any retrospective thoughts about Goodnight Moon?
I mean, I think the illustrations are super beautiful, and I think as I've evolved into the adult I am and doing design and art in different ways, I definitely appreciate that more.
And how about you, Kate?
I would agree with that, and I would also add on that I think I've become conscious of one of the reasons I liked it so much, which is our house took up a lot of the aesthetic of Goodnight Moon. We had your green office that we read in, and there was a lot of striped fabrics in our house, and I think retrospectively I can see how those two things combined to make me kind of like it more than I might have.
How interesting. I never thought of that. So any children's books that you've read as a kid and that you've looked at since that you now have a different emotional resonance with?
In the course of my dad writing this book, I just revisited The Runaway Bunny. And I think as a rising college senior with the angst of having to like really leave home and like all of the emotions and fears and anxieties that come with real adulthood being on the horizon, I think I was a little bit more moved by that book than I was maybe when I was a little kid.
And of course, the Runaway Bunny's thing is that this maternal presence is always going to bring you back no matter what happens.
That means you're going to move back in?
I hope not. Oh, no. I love my parents so much. They're so wonderful. But I do know that they're always there for me and they will be there to support me no matter what.
Bruce, your book obviously couldn't include everybody's favorite books from childhood, like Babar the Elephant and, of course, Harry Potter. On the J.K. Rowling front, did you decide not to include Harry Potter because they've been written about so much already?
Yeah, I think the more I got into it, and it was, you know, partly since this book is about, hey, adults can read these books, you know, I guess that's the elevator pitch. Harry Potter is already so widely read by adults. And, you know, the Times, you know, Michiko Kakutani would be reviewing the new one, you know.
There were articles at the time of the first ones about, oh, look, adults reading Harry Potter on the subway. And I got to admit, I sort of disapproved of that. Uh-huh. As much as I liked reading them myself, when I saw grown-ups reading them, I thought, really?
I'm curious for all four of you, if you two reread the Harry Potter books as well, I'm curious, like, having read these books again and again, what do you see new in them as you each time you read it? I mean, have you discovered things as you've aged that are more interesting or about them?
Ron and Hermione's sexual tension.
Palpable.
And Kate, you are now a true adult. You still read a lot of fantasy.
I read a lot of the books that would make you cringe on the subway. Yeah.
No. But you read a lot of fantasy fiction.
Books with maps in them.
And does that feel like, oh, I'm still holding on to some child part of myself to you, or just these are the books I like?
No. I mean, not consciously. We can examine that later. But I just like those books.
In therapy,
books. Yeah,
you mean?
Exactly.
You know, your wife reads those books, too.
No, I just like them. I like adventure. I like fantasy. I like sci-fi. I kind of consider them my fun books, and then I usually alternate between my fun books and my proper books so that I'm getting an equal intake. But those are the books that I just rip through in like 2 days and love them.
Zoe and Isaac, your mother is the very accomplished novelist, Helen Schulman. Growing up, did you guys think of books differently than the average kid because your parents were both writers?
Well, we were always kind of like the book family, like every birthday, we'd be, like, the only family that we'd give everybody books, and we were, like, the only families that did that. And
did that make you well-liked or not?
you tell me, so.
No, none of you young people are young enough to have been totally in the age of the iPad. Books were the thing. You didn't really read on screens. What do you feel like if and when any of you have children? Are physical children's books going to be a thing you keep going in 2034 or whenever it is you have children?
It'd be a little late, but.
And Lucy, when are you having children, by the way?
Okay. but yes, if and when I have children, I think physical books are important. Purely from I think a home without books is weird. Whether you read it once and put it on the shelf and never, you know, look at it again is fine. I just think that books are pretty key. And I do think there's something to be said about sort of the closure one gains and the sense of satisfaction from closing a book.
I have done my work well. and Zoe and Isaac, you feel like you're going to if and when you have children, that the books will still be part of it?
I don't really feel like I'm going to have much of a choice. Like, I can just, like, imagine, like, the day, like, my children are born, the first thing dad's going to do when he comes in the room is he's going to bring in a pile of, like, 20 books with, like, Goodnight Moon and, like, all the Dr. Seusses.
Yeah, our children are absolutely getting copies of Goodnight Moon from my parents.
Yeah. For what it's worth, I actually do have children's books in my bookshelves in my apartment, so it's probably already a done deal.
Well, and the next version of this is we'll talk about stuffed animals, which is a whole other adult thing that I have my doubts about. But anyway, Zoe, Isaac, Kate, Lucy, and Bruce Handy, thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Bruce Handy's new book, Wild Things, The Joy of Reading Children's Literature as an Adult, is available everywhere. And thanks to our readers, Alex Galifant, Leon Nafok, and June Thomas.